You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome into a Monday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on the brand new podcast app, Himalaya. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with David Ramil. It's Blue Notebook Monday. These have been a hit, David. We've really enjoyed doing them. They've been really well received, I think, from everybody that's listening. I think this is where we just scout players in the draft that are sort of in the range for the Miami Heat. You and I have been talking. We might even just do more of these.
Yeah, I mean, the reception has been so positive, and we really appreciate it. I mean, most people probably don't realize how much we appreciate that kind of feedback, but to know that they're listening, that they're paying attention, and that they think that we add something of value to a process that's very, very difficult. And that's another thing, too, is that for somebody who has been notoriously anti-draft as I have been, the yes. scouting process is not an easy one. Like, there are so many different factors there. You can you can think about them from a perspective of just assessing their physicality, their talent, whatever that might mean, and their fit and things of this sort. It's really complicated. It's been a hell of a lot of fun too, though. So I really do appreciate having this opportunity to go through these players with you.
And so we're doing them like, all right, we'll go through the, sort of the player overview, what they are kind of about, their whole situation, their stats, pros and cons, and then the pros and cons things. Like when we're doing our research, we see pros and cons listed from every, that's all subjective. And I want everybody to keep that in mind. Like, just because it shows up on whatever website as this player is a above average ball handler or whatever it is, I might disagree with that. You might disagree with that or whatever. So that's important to just keep in mind that this is not an exact science. That's why a lot of these things end up being wrong. You say that all the time, that all these guys basically suck all the time, but
not quite that far.
Zion Williamson, are we sure? No, but so let's just go ahead and do it. So you'll start. We'll go through. We both take a different player. This is how we've been doing it for the last couple of weeks. We'll spend a couple of days just deep diving that player, watching film, reading up on that stuff. And so you'll take one, then I'll take one. And at the end of the show, we'll sort of come back around and decide, what we think their upside is, what their overall fit with the Heat is, which one of these guys we like better, and where they sort of place on our general big board. Which maybe we'll debut the big board today. You and I have been kind of going back and forth on that. Maybe we'll do that at the end of the show. But who was your prospect that you worked on?
It was Romeo Langford out of Indiana. He played one season with the Hoosiers. He's actually from Indiana, so he stayed home and went to school there. Langford is a pretty divisive prospect, and we'll get into it a little bit more as we talk about the player. But he was very, very highly touted. He had some really strong showings in high school, incredible scoring ability. In fact, even outplayed Zion Williamson at one occasion. You look for video, it's one of the first things that pops up is that Romeo Langford, quote-unquote, outplayed Zion Williamson. So for all the hype Zion's getting, there are people who believe Langford is the better prospect, although that didn't exactly pan out in his one season in Indiana. His stats are kind of up and down. 16.5 points per game. He played about 34 minutes per game, shot 45% from the field, 53% on two-pointers, 27% on three-pointers. And that was part of the issue with Langford, is that he had in high school a reputation of being a long-range shooter and stalwart defender, and none of those things panned out in his one season in Indiana. So he's a solid rebounder. He had 5.4 rebounds per game, 2.3 assists per game, although he's not a great passer. His size is really what makes him, in my opinion, and I think in a lot of people's opinion, the most tantalizing as far as his ability to translate into the NBA. 6'6", roughly 215 pounds, really, really lanky, 6'11 wingspan. So we're talking about the physical profile of a guy who can be an incredible wing defender and really just, make an impact at the shooting guard position. And that is his position. He can play the two, he can play the three. He played a little point in high school, but that's not really his strong suit. So as far as the pros are concerned,
it sounds a little like Josh Richardson-ish kind of physical profile.
No, he's much more built, I think.
He's bigger. Okay.
Yeah, they kind of list him, they say he's wiry, but I think he's a little bit more physical as a freshman in college. Think about Richardson playing 4 years at Tennessee, coming into the draft and still kind of having that kind of frame. So I think there's potential for Langford to put on more weight and muscle as he gets drafted. So as far as the pros are concerned, obviously the size and length is a big part of it. And it kind of translates into his ability to absorb contact. He's really, really good at drawing fouls. He's very strong and he can absorb the contact, and he's great at finishing then as a result. So when you see him in film, he gets to the hoop pretty easily. He's very, very good in space as a one-on-one player. He's got a good first step. I've seen some people criticize it. Again, the subjectivity that we were talking about. Some people say he doesn't have a great first step. Other people say he has an excellent first step. So in my opinion, he's more creative. He's not necessarily going to burst past you, but he's really good at finding the seams. Kind of like, and not because of the physical profiles, which don't match at all, but like Deion. Like, you look at Deion, he doesn't seem particularly explosive, but he'll get past anybody. I mean, when he's healthy, I mean, he's got the ability to really get past with that first step. He knows exactly when to explode and get to the rim. So in Langford's case, he has the ability to finish over everybody, especially with that 6'11 length. And that's just the other thing of him. The overall aspect of him that I think most scouts really like is that he's a great creative and natural scorer. It comes easily to him. And unfortunately, the three-point shooting didn't quite work out. So as far as the cons are concerned, the biggest one is his defense. He just, a lot like the same way that people were talking about Hachimura in their last Notebook Monday, he's really spacey. Like he'll be on the floor and totally lack awareness of where his player is. Like he'll you know, start shading towards the painted area, even as his guy is already out on the perimeter with an open shot. He just kind of loses focus. And that's unfortunate considering he has all these physical tools that really allow him to be an on-ball stopper, but he's just not particularly good at it. As good as a passer as he can be, because he does have nifty passing ability, he just doesn't pass very often, and he's not particularly good at playmaking off the dribble, so that's an issue for somebody who's going to have the ball in his hands as much as he does. The ball handling is also not something that's particularly great for Langford. He can lose control of the ball. You look at the highlights, and of course they all show him getting to the rim pretty easily, but you look at some of the other plays there, and he turns the ball over quite a bit, not particularly good at holding on to it, and so that's a problem for a player his size also. He just needs to, I think, tighten that dribble a little bit. And then the aggressiveness from him is something that's problematic. Again, the same way we see it on defense, we see it on his offense as well. Like, if he can get to the rim as easily does, this is a player who should be getting to the rim all the time and doesn't. And so that's a concern for scouts at the next level. And then his shooting, like I said, great high school shooter. He had some injury issues and, you know, he had a thumb problem, and so maybe that's partly what contributed to his 27% shooting from long range, but it's his form that everybody agrees on, and I saw it too, is a debacle. Like, he buckles his knees.
Oh, boy.
His elbow kind of kicks out. It's, the form is atrocious. And, you know, form doesn't have to be an exact science. You know, Steph Curry doesn't have perfect form, but at the same time, he just knocks these down. That is not the case with Langford. He's all over the place. His feet are never set the same way. His legs, like I said, are, you know, positioned poorly, and his elbows and arms just don't seem to be any kind of fluidity in his motion, which is unfortunate. Some people think that he'll be able to fix it. Others aren't so optimistic. I tend to be part of that latter group.
It's interesting because I didn't think that this was going to happen, but your player that you scouted, my player that I scouted, they have a lot of things that are similar. We'll get into that when we get to the next segment here, but are you worried because here's the thing with Romeo Langford that I like. Just a blue chip recruit, right? Born and raised in Indiana, played hoops growing up, went to Indiana, was the fifth best, the top five recruit on ESPN's top 100 rankings. I like that. And I get a little worried when, you know, it's just one down year in college, because so much of college is, it's like, who else on Indiana was good? You know, was it more of a situation where there's not the proper spacing there, where maybe he wasn't getting the best coaching or whatever it might be? Are you worried at all about his experience at Indiana in general?
I think the problem is that you're going to make the most of that opportunity when you're given. Look, he had the option of coming back. He chose not to. You know, if you're not getting the most, or you don't highlight your skill set to the best of your ability because you want to use injuries as a reason or explanation for it, you can always go back and prove yourself. I mean,
you could also argue, like, well, it didn't really work out for me, so why would I go back? I've got a good chance to be a lottery pick. If I go back and it's like a repeat of the whole same thing, I might you know, not be in the top 20.
Sure, potentially. But again, you have to kind of have ownership over that. And I think partly the problem is that kind of hype that you mentioned before. Like, I think that it kind of damages a player's willingness to show out a little bit, because already you've got that hype going in there, and you kind of look at your freshman year, this one and done system, as saying, well, I don't really have to prove myself because I've already proven myself. And the reality is, you were an 18-year-old playing against particularly bad competition for most of the time, and then you have 1 year at a collegiate level where you can play against better competition, still not great and certainly far from NBA level competition, and you don't necessarily show out. What's to say that you're going to be able to take those abilities and skills to the next level? And so when I look at that and his 1 year and whatever excuse making he wants to apply to it, I'm concerned.
Like, well, how much of it is excuse making, and how much of it is legit? Because some of these college situations are just bad for these guys, and they end up blossoming at the NBA level because the situations are so much better.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, you have to take time. You have to look, they're 19 years old. Like, the expectations of these players to come in at 19 and be incredible all NBA level players is unrealistic. And so
right.
It's, you know, there's so much involved in a player's success when they're drafted. And that's why I kind of partly rally against the draft, is you have to have the right fit. You have to have the right coaching staff, like you mentioned. You have to have a better system that can help you develop into the player that you're supposed to be. So there's talent. And again, the physical tools are all there. I just feel like intellectually, like, his personality may not be geared towards willing to put in that kind of effort. Okay. Like, I feel like there's already a sense of entitlement there. And I feel that if that's the case, then that might not necessarily bode well for his NBA career. I could be wrong. And maybe, you know, that psychoanalysis isn't necessarily something that people expect out of scouting reports. But I didn't like his approach to the game. Again, if you're questioning a player's aggression, if you're questioning their defensive intensity, if you're questioning where their head's at on offense and why they don't attack the basket more, what does that say about a player who has 1 year to prove themselves?
No, that stuff definitely matters. And I think that's really, to me, that's more beneficial out of doing this work that we're doing than just saying he's got a 6'11 wingspan, right? That's the stuff that really comes out. So that's fair, and I think that's definitely important. Especially when, you know, this Romeo Langford, he's kind of this late lottery situation, depending, like, I think he's one of these guys that teams have all over their boards, right? And you know, people that do this for a living have all over their boards. But he's right there in that mix with Coby White, Kevin Porter Jr. Like, yeah. There's a lot of guys at that two-guard position, so like, these are the things that can, you know, either get you selected higher or lower than his peers. What are some of the comps that you have for him?
They're all over the place. I've seen Evan Turner, I guess just because of the physicality, although Turner looks like he's a little bit more big-bodied. And
neither could shoot.
Right. That's a big part of it. And then they kind of have KCP. I've seen Kentavious Caldwell-Pope as an option as well, just because of that whole kind of physicality, the length, the rangy body that can guard multiple positions. So I feel like that's a better one. I kind of like the Tyreek Evans comp because I think they have the same physical profile as far as their weight and strength is concerned. Obviously, Langford has the ability to put on more muscle throughout his career, but I kind of like that. Neither of them are particularly good shooters. Both of them have good dribbles and get to the rim pretty easily, and I think that's the core of their game. So,
but like Tyreek Evans, especially this last year in Indiana, it's like, well, you should probably get to the rim a little bit more. You should probably be taking a little bit more free throws than he actually does, right?
Sure. And Evans was able to develop his three-point shooting a little bit. You know, I mean, he shot close to 40% at some point throughout his career. So that's opportunity is there, I think, for Langford, too. It might take years to get there. So he's not a prospect that you're going to want to invest in right away and capitalize on them becoming an instant contributor.
So we've usually been doing the upside scale at the during each player, but we're going to save that for the third segment. We'll do both of our players, but that's going to be it for Romeo Langford for now. We'll revisit him in the third segment, but coming up next, I'll tell you about the player that I did some scouting work on, Sekou Doumbouya. Okay, back with Locked On Heat. Sekou Doumbouya, that's the player that I worked on for the last few days here. Really interesting prospect that you and I have been batting around as a potential target for the Miami Heat in this draft. 18-year-old forward out of France. He moved to France from Guinea when he was 1 year old, but he's basically born and raised there. Played soccer growing up. He was a soccer striker which I thought was really interesting and kind of plays into his overall mentality, how he plays the basketball. He started playing basketball at 12 years old. So raw prospect, a lot of untapped potential there. He's got athleticism that's off the charts, but again, he's still learning how to use that and implement it in a basketball game. And there's potential here for him to develop into a mismatch, I think, at either forward spot, small forward, power forward. 6'9", 230 pounds, 6'11", wingspan. The stats last year in 17 minutes a game. This is stats from France. 17 minutes a game, 6.6 points per game, 3 rebounds, and 0.8 assists to go along with 0.7 steals, 0.4 blocks. Shot 49% from the field, 31.7% from three-point range. And then if you extrapolate that per 36, it looks a little bit better. Because, again, he's only playing 17 minutes a game. A lot of these international guys don't play long minutes, especially the younger ones. That's not necessarily an indictment on the player. It's not like he didn't deserve more. There's a hierarchy. They tend to play veterans longer. That's just how it works. But his per 36 minutes are pretty good. His per 36 stats are pretty good. 14 points per game, 6.3 rebounds, 1.6 assists, etc. So, some of the pros are obvious. His size, his strength, his mobility could make him a really versatile defender. He has that profile. It's not quite there yet, but he's got the profile. He's got the tools. As you can see from the per 36 numbers, really productive as a rebounder. So he's going to be able to do that right away at the NBA level. There's signs of shooting touch there. I wouldn't say the production is there, but there are definitely signs, especially in catch-and-shoot situations. There are signs of shooting touch. He could push the ball, score in transition off of rebounds. I think that's maybe the biggest positive right away is that, again, he can jump up, grab a rebound, handle the ball, bring it down in transition, and then score at the other end. And I like his feel around the rim and in the paint. He's not afraid to finish through contact. He does get quite a bit of free throw attempts, and he will get quite a bit of free throw attempts that way. He underrated feel as a cutter. He likes to cut off ball. He's moving. He's one of these mover guys. He doesn't just stand in the corner. He, despite only picking up the game at 12 years old, has an innate feel for the game. So you like to see that. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, how big of a concern, you know, obviously this past year we saw Luka Doncic go through unfair criticism because he didn't play through the NCAA system. And even though he was having the kind of success he did internationally and become the player that he was that made him such an interesting prospect, how concerned are you about the level of competition that Dumbuya played against?
I'm not.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I would be the Luka thing is a little bit different because he's not an elite athlete.
Right.
So I can understand when you put him next to, you know, competition that isn't NBA level athletes, I could see why that would be a concern. But with Sekou Doumbouya, he is an NBA level athlete. Like, that is one of the things in his pros column is that he's a ridiculous athlete. So I think it's a little bit less. But look, I hope that it is a I hope that that reputation is still out there. I hope that that idea is still out there because I hope that this guy slides. I really like this player, so yeah. I hope other teams pass on him for that reason. And like we saw with Luka, teams do shy away from international prospects.
Oh, without a doubt.
Some of the cons: needs to shore up his defensive fundamentals, positioning, focus, overall awareness. That is lacking. Again, you can give a little bit of credit to him not playing basketball for as long as some of these other guys, but there does also seem to be maybe a little bit of a disinterest. And I do think some of that also might be just due to the fact that I don't know that, like, France is known for playing great defense. Like, international basketball, I should say, in general, is not. I don't know. That's so fair. But it's out there. Questionable ball handler. He's got, like, this weird handle where he kind of dribbles. Like, he's got a high dribble, but the dribble almost goes up into his armpit. And it's this weird, like, tucked in thing sometimes. And then other times it's completely outside his body. He's going to get called, like, if the NBA decides to call carries, he's going to get called for carries a lot. He carries the ball. Like, he just does it. The hand slides under. If they decide to call him, they can call him probably. He could probably get called 4 or 5 times a game.
Is there anybody in the league comparable as far as their dribble is concerned? Because I haven't seen it.
Like, all these guys, when they first, like Derrick Jones Jr. Like, these guys that are like, maybe just don't do that.
Right.
He's better than Derrick Jones Jr. He's already better than Derrick Jones Jr. is. He's more skilled than Derrick Jones Jr., but, like, I guess, like, that would be a more extreme case of this. But it's a little bit of that. But sometimes it looks good, right? Sometimes it's inconsistent, but it's questionable for sure. The carry thing is always there, though. He carries the ball 100% of the time. Inconsistent mechanics on his jump spot, especially when he's, you know, carrying the ball and then pulling up, you know, off the dribble. There's a lot of inconsistencies in his mechanics. He kind of just looks different all the time. Very similar to me to Justice Winslow his first couple of years, where it's all right. Sometimes, like, your legs are further apart than they are than they were the last time you did this. Your knees buckle this way versus that way, and, you know, your elbow looks different every other time that you're doing this. So that, I'm not as concerned about it, because he does, like I said in the pros, there are signs of good touch. Like, there's something to work with there. He's not just a clunker, right? He can make shots despite the inconsistent mechanics, which wasn't the case for Justice necessarily. So if you get the mechanics, but for right now they're inconsistent, something to be aware of. I mentioned the better defensive awareness. What else? He's a bad decision maker with the ball in his hands. I think some of that you could chalk up to inexperience, but doesn't pass a whole lot. There's a little bit of Hassan Whiteside stuff there where, you know, doesn't know what to do with it, so he's just going to throw it up at the rim instead of maybe dribble out of a situation or, you know, repost or, you know, pass the ball off and turn into a screener. Like, it doesn't do any of that stuff, you know?
Right.
So I think there's just bad decision-making, maybe bad feel when he has the ball in his hands. He seems a little rushed with it sometimes. So that's a concern as well. And then the last thing, there's rumors of subpar conditioning with him. There's times where he'll just sort of play a game and take a breather on a possession. Just will take a break. You know, just stand in the corner and just not do stuff. You know, bent over, kind of gasping for air a lot of times. So something that he's going to have to work on is his conditioning at the NBA level.
That's so all I got. He's got this elite athleticism, but yet sometimes he's not particularly well conditioned. I mean,
those two things are different. No.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. I
like, he could jump. He can jump super high, but if he jumps super high a few different times, he'll need to take a break. Like,
okay. Yeah, that's fair. You know, it's just, it sounds like he's just a really raw player, but an interesting prospect. And you seem, based on what you're telling me, that you're pretty confident that he's got the ability to take that raw ability and translate it into a pretty solid NBA career.
I mean, there's already, like, as raw as he is, there's stuff to work with already. You know, like, first of all, if the Heat drafted him, he'd be the second best athlete on the Heat behind Bam. Like, he would just, by day one, he'd be the second best athlete on the Heat, something.
And Deion, of course.
And of course, Deion Waiters. I guess you can argue Derrick Jones Jr., but Derrick Jones, like, he'll be the second best with any, you know, basketball skill. But there's stuff that you can already work on. Like, I like that he's an off-ball cutter. Like, I don't know why I like it so much. It shows that he gets it. Like, he's all right, I don't need the ball in my hands to do something. Like, he just gets it. He's active.
You kind of hinted at it earlier, and I feel like that kind of approach of, you know, maybe it's just an international perspective, but soccer, or what they call football, so kind of helps in that regard. It's like, you don't always have the ball there. You have to know how to play off of it without it and get yourself in position to either set somebody up or score yourself. And so that kind of footwork, that kind of understanding of where to be on the court is probably an advantage for him.
Yeah, I was going to forget to loop back around to that, so I'm glad you brought that up. Because he plays the game sort of like a soccer striker, which I love that. I absolutely love that. And we'll get to the comps later on, but some of the players that have kind of blossomed in the NBA that he compares to, they have that similar, like, attacking mentality. And him being, like, having grown up as a soccer striker, like, he likes to just, he knows angles, right? Like, it's not that he is cutting, it's how he is cutting. Like, he's taking the right angles. He's doing the slot cut off of the opposite break, or, you know, he does know how to cut off the same side as the ball handler. He's not afraid to go baseline and go and finish through contact. Like, he's aware of the angles. He's aware of timing. Like, that, all that stuff matters. And I really like that. So I think all the ball handling stuff and all that at the NBA level, hopefully he doesn't have to do that for 2 or 3 years. And, like, he was anchoring a unit in France that he's not going to have to do at an NBA level for quite some time. Best case scenario for him, I mean. But if you can put him in the corner, so you're not worried as much about his shooting mechanics because it's more of a catch-and-shoot situation. It's easier. His percentages are pretty good from the corners. His form looks good from the corners. You put him there, let him cut off ball from that kind of wing position. He could start doing stuff offensively, I think, right away. He'll just start scoring in a similar way to Derrick Jones Jr. Like, he gets around the rim, he's active, and he'll just put up points. He'll find ways to score. You're not going to call plays for him, but he'll find ways to put up points. And on the defensive end, if you can lock him in with the fundamentals and you can get him in the right coaching staff, I think there's a lot to work with there. So a lot of potential. And I understand why he is a lottery pick, because there's just a lot to work. And again, only 18 years old, and so he's only been playing basketball for 6 years. 6 years, that's it.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think they don't have that kind of understanding necessarily, but again, a diverse approach to the game. So, I mean, let's move on then. Who are the comps that you saw as far as his game is translating?
Yeah, the lazy comp, but I think it's a good one, is Pascal Siakam.
Okay.
They're the same body type. I think Pascal's wingspan is slightly longer, but not by much. But 6'9", 230. That's a big dude at 18 years old. That is a big dude. And they've got a very similar frame, a lot of similar athleticism. I thought it was lazy, and then I'm watching the film and I'm doing the homework here. It's a really good comp. They're kind of the same player. When Pascal's coming out, I mean, not like Pascal right now is like all-star level forward, but there's a lot to work with. And I think it's a perfect comp. The other ones I'm looking at, Lukumba Amute,
mm-hmm.
kind of like Pascal Siakam, who like never learned to shoot or handle particularly well, or like get a spin move. Taller Miles Bridges.
Huh.
But I think he's got he probably has higher upside from a skill level standpoint than Miles Bridges does. So yeah, those are my comps.
Does he have you mentioned the body shape. Is he already in NBA level shape, or is he still okay?
I mean, he'll be able to finish through contact. He shouldn't break down, and he's got the length and the versatility and the mobility, side-to-side mobility too, to get out and switch on the perimeter. But he's also 230 pounds, and he can defend the post really well. I didn't mention that, but he's a good post defender. Like, he is built right now to be in a switching-style defense and thrive in it, like, day one. As long as he gets the fundamentals down, but that comes with coaching.
You think he can guard smaller ball handlers too?
I think he could. I see no reason why not, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I see no reason why he wouldn't. All right, so those are the comps. We've done both of the players. Let's take a break here. We'll get to our upside scale, and then I guess kind of figure out where these guys slide onto our big board. We'll do that after the break. You're listening to Locked On Heat. All right, David, upside scale for Romeo Langford. Where does he rank? What's his percentage going to be as a fringe player? What's the percent he ends up as a contributor? What's the percent that he ends up as, an all-star or superstar player?
Well, it's kind of all over the place for him here because, again, there's a lot that's good and there are some things that are questionable and whether or not he's able to actually take him to that next level. So I actually have him as a 25% chance of being a fringe player. If that shot never falls, if he falls into a wrong situation, a bad situation, the good chance for him is that he'll slip in the lottery a little bit, maybe even completely out of the lottery, so he'll be a late first-round pick. And if that's the case, chances are he'll fall to a better team, so they're not going to be counting on him to contribute right away. And if that's the case, he has a better chance of taking his game to another level. So fringe, 25% chance of actually being a pretty bad player at some point, or one that actually never translates those physical tools into quality level of play. As far as his level of contribution, he's going to be a solid rotation player. More than likely, I give him a 50-50 chance of that. So 50% chance of actually being a good, solid contributor, because those tools are just undeniable. Like, he's so effortless in his scoring ability that it's hard not to see him be able to at least contribute in some way, whether he's a sixth man because he can provide some instant offense. If you can find a way to focus that what limited aggression there is to a limited role, maybe that's where it'll benefit him the most. And then as far as being an all-star, I mean, there's a possibility there because, again, those tools are there. His ability to absorb for contact, and he said that he likes Harden as a comparison. Like, he likes the step back. So he has that already implemented in his game. He has a floater. He has polished moves finishing at the basket. I mean, this is impressive that he doesn't tie it all together all the time, is concerning, but there's still potential there. So I give him a 15% chance of being an all-star, and I even give him a 10% chance of being a superstar.
I think that all that's very fair. It almost feels like he's rushing things a little bit. Like he wants to be James Harden right now.
Right.
And it seems there's these other things that he's not ready to advance past, right? He's trying to do, I don't know, like calculus, and he needs to finish algebra, right? Where it's like, all right, no, just shoot threes well, right. Then start stepping back and stepping to the side. But just shoot threes well and then go from there.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, think about how everybody kind of approaches it is this label of being a natural, talented scorer. So maybe it's kind of worked out for him. Maybe the hype of high school plus the versatility, even if it's not, even if he doesn't excel in any one aspect, there's still enough potential, enough flashes there where people kind of go, maybe there's a hope for him to become a superstar at the NBA level.
It sounds like coaching is really going to matter for him. It's really going to be important for him and the situation that he ends up in. Okay, so my upside scale for Sekou Dembuya, fringe, I've got 10%. Mm. I just think that's fair. I just don't think there's a big chance, but there's always a chance. Contributor, I have at 70%.
Wow.
I think he's going to be, like, look, I go back to the comps. Like, Pascal Siakam is going to be all-star. Like, he is now in that all-star category. But if he never developed that shot, maybe he's more Luka Mbamute, right? He's played a long time in the NBA. Al-Farouq Aminu is another comp. Played a long time in the NBA. Not a great shooter, but is streaky. And it's like one of those guys where when he's making shots, it sort of raises, you know, the ceiling for the offense. It's almost a barometer for how the offense is working. I could kind of see him doing that if he never really develops a go-to move offensively, a consistent outside jumper, a consistent off-the-dribble game like Pascal has. Like, he's just going to be in the league as a good defender, a guy who can rebound, play small ball four for you, be a linchpin of your defense, and turn defense into offense via transition. And I think there's a really good chance that that's where he ends up. But then there's probably a 15% chance then that he ends up as an all-star and probably a 5% chance as a superstar. Something around there. So 20% that he kind of blossoms into Pascal Siakam, basically. Hmm. Which I look, we're talking about 90% chance now that the dude's going to help you at 13. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we're hoping for. Like, I mean, you hope that there's a chance that he becomes a superstar, but at the very least, you don't want to miss out. And I think that's a concern for, you know, especially at the top five. I mean, if you have a top five pick, then clearly you cannot afford to mess that up. But at 13, you're hoping just to get, at the very least, a pretty solid guy, which it sounds like actually both players might have that potential of becoming really solid players. And if there's even a glimmer that they might become superstars, then you've done your job as a coach or executive.
Yep. And look, and like you said, they're going to be able to contribute. It sounds like Romeo Langford can walk in tomorrow and be a guy who can sort of be this microwave scorer off the bench for you. But Sekou Dembuya can walk in tomorrow and defend a couple different forward positions and rebound the ball for you. Right. What does that team need? That leads us into our final thing here. Is he a fit for the Heat? What do you think about Romeo Langford? Do you think it makes sense at 13?
I mean, we talked about in our most recent mailbag that he could be part of a three-guard lineup. You know, he has that kind of size where he can guard multiple positions, even if he didn't really show that ability consistently. The scoring is there, kind of takes the pressure off of guys getting to the rim. If we're already looking at Deion Waiters or whomever winds up starting alongside Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson as a guy who drives to the hoop, Langford could be that guy. I mean, he could go in there and instantly try to get his, you know, to the rim, draw fouls, and potentially even start shooting those free throws a little bit better. And if that's the case, he has a chance to contribute. You know, he has the right size. He has some tools there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting fit if you're looking to shore up that position. And, you know,
well, the concern is the outside shooting. Like, Deion spaces the floor. Romeo Langford does not.
Right. And that's where I have a hard time seeing him be on Miami's radar, just because the shooting is so problematic. And Miami's already lacking so much from the shooting perspective, they need somebody who's a really solid shooter. I mean, think about your argument about Kobe White. This is the exact opposite of that.
Right.
You know, maybe, you know, and so I would not think that Miami is looking at Langford as an option at 13.
So they probably prefer Kobe White and Kevin Porter Jr., the two other guards that are in the zone that we've already scouted. They're in previous Blue Notebook Mondays.
Yes.
They're better fits. I agree with that. Especially, look, you make the Deion Waiters comparison. Well, the Heat have Deion Waiters, and it doesn't seem like they're going to be getting off of Deion Waiters' contract anytime soon. And you don't want that to prevent you from drafting the next Kobe Wade, right? But it's not a great fit, especially if, you know, maybe the Heat like one of these other guys a little bit better. As far as fit for Sekou Doumbouya, I think it's a great fit. It's what we talked about, getting souped up James Johnson in a tuxedo. He could be that. Absolutely. I mean, like I said, first of all, James Johnson, not a good rebounder for his position. He's just not. Sekou Doumbouya is. And if you have a forward next to Bam Adebayo, Bam's a good rebounder, but you're losing some a little bit when you go from Whiteside to Bam, just because Whiteside is an elite rebounder. I think you need a little bit of size there. I think you need a little bit more rebounding help at the two front court positions. So I think he fills in nicely there. And like I said, this is a team that struggled to score a lot last year. What Doumbouya can do is grab a rebound, bring the ball, like play good defense,
right?
Grab a rebound off of a missed shot, take the ball down in transition and score at the other end, and maybe even get you a free throw. Like, he turns defense into a rebound, into offense. And that could be really useful for Miami, especially as they pivot into this younger core that is going to want to get out and run a little bit more. Yeah. So I think he's a great fit for Miami.
Yeah, I love it. I got to be honest with you. It sounds like you're pretty high on him. And then the more you talk about it, the more I've seen from him, I really do like the fit, because it's, again, athletic. You're looking at all of a sudden this team being really, really high level physicality. I mean, between Bam and Josh and Justice, et cetera, and, you know, you need to shore up some of those positions a little bit. But at the same time, he can add a lot to it. He picks up the pace a lot. It's a more athletic, explosive offense, I think. And I think that that rebounding edge and being able to take that and translate it into points, I mean, that's a skill that a lot of players at the Heat roster did not have last year. And so that's definitely beneficial to have.
Mm-hmm. Good point. All right, so let's quickly just run down our big board here. As it's currently constructed, this is going to change. This is going to change through here. But the way we have it now, we've got it kind of broken up because of where the Heat are slotted to pick. Now, again, the draft lottery is this week. We'll figure out if the Heat are indeed picking at 13. Odds are that they will be picking at 13. But likely off the board by the time the Heat pick, top seven guys: Zion Williamson, Ja Morant, RJ Barrett, Jarrett Culver, DeAndre Hunter, Darius Garland, and Cam Reddish, in that order. We've only scouted of that group Cam Reddish. You did that, I think, on the first Blue Moon. That was the first guy we did. Yeah.
I did.
Those guys are probably off the board by the time the Heat are picking. Could slide.
Mm-hmm.
Sekou Doumbouya, we mentioned. Maybe a little bit of the international juju might, you know, scare people off there a little bit. I think overall fit, maybe natural scoring ability could scare people off a little bit. He could slide. I could see him sliding. Not guaranteed, but he could slide. Brandon Clark out of Gonzaga, we'll get to him at some point. I think he could also slide. And then late lottery. This is really where a bulk of our scouting reports have been so far. We've got Rui Hachimura at 11, Kobe White at 12, Kevin Porter Jr. at 13, Romeo Langford at 14, and then we've scouted all of them, and then two guys we haven't scouted, Nassir Little out of North Carolina, and then Bol Bol, the really interesting center out of Oregon who barely played last year. We'll get to all those players. We'll get to all the players I just talked about at some point, and probably more as we keep doing those. But that's what our big board looks like right now. I'll try to tweet it out. We have no Game of Thrones thoughts today. We'll get to that at some point later in the week, David, I think. We'll find some time to do it.
Absolutely.
But that's it for now. We'll have another scouting report, too, I think, at some point this week. So be on the lookout for that. But this has been Blue Notebook Monday. Thanks for listening. You can connect with us on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.